This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. In each episode, we bring you information, insights, and ideas from some of the industry's top thought leaders. Connect with us to help pick the topic and guide the show.
This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. I'm your host, Jamie Wood. Our topic today, unpacking media agencies. Now, agency sales is its own unique subset of media sales. And as media agencies become more sophisticated, as media fragments more and more, as more options become available for client budgets to be invested, you really have to kind of have an in-depth understanding of media agencies. You need to know the philosophy that underpins them. You need to know what their operating structures are. You need to know what their processes are. This stuff's a non-negotiable moving forward. Our guest today is a good friend of mine, a guy called Caleb Watson. He is based in Singapore. Caleb is the head of client management and growth at APAC for Initiative. And what we're going to do today is a bit of a deep dive into media agencies. We're going to get an understanding of the philosophy that underpins them. We're going to do a bit of a hypothetical brief right through to PCR. We're going to talk about all the different functions and roles and processes that happen throughout that. And the rationale is really simple. The better you understand media agencies, the better you're going to be able to work with them as a media sales professional. Really looking forward to this one. I'm going to jump in right now.
The first five.
Caleb, welcome.
Thanks, Jamie. It's great to be here, coming from hot and humid Singapore.
Well, down to hot and humid Brisbane, but not as bad. Mate, it's bloody great to see you. Mate, it's been a while. I think when you were working in China, we weren't really communicating on the social media or anything like that. And
yeah, it's very, very restricted up there, and even more so now. So
tell us a bit about yourself, your current gig, and your just a broad background in sort of the media marketing space.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been working, 20 plus years, a lot of it in Australia, to be honest, a lot in Sydney, where I started, and then did a small stint in the UK, more in regional, back to Australia, up to Brisbane, which is really, really cool, where I actually met Jamie, and got into more agency management, and then took the leap to go to, the Far East in China, to thought it was a very exciting media marketplace, and it was nothing like I've ever worked in before. And then I went, okay, I've done that, COVID's here, and I've been in my current role in Singapore, again, very different, of a regional remit, so I look after, for Initiative, like all client management, so all the main sort of clients, and then what we call our client advice and management key team members in each of the markets. And then also growth, so new business, so sort of double hatting.
That's awesome. And I think you've obviously worked in like a marketing function. I knew you when you were running an agency, and that's probably been predominantly your experience, which is handy for today's topic because it's all about unpacking media agencies for people who are on the other side of the fence in that media sales role. Set us up, mate. This is a big question. What is kind of the philosophy that underpins a media agency? What is it that you and the team strive to do on a daily basis for your clients?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, again, I do the whole cliche, every client's different, every agency's different. But if you boil it down, I think that what we're there as an agency is really to consult and support. I was trying to wrap my brain about what does that actually mean, but we are sort of consulting to them. We're tapping into, experts in certain areas, such as on the media owner side, you're experts in your field, in terms of like, your audiences, the content, et cetera. So we tap into that. How do we sort of connect that world with, what the client is wanting to achieve? And that might be whether they're looking to grow the brand, whether they're looking to, expand their market, whether they're looking to engage, etc. So we look to consult and bring in, and then what's in my role with the agency is I look to bring in the best within the agency group to then help with that. That could be in analytics and strategy and planning and looking at where we can tap into that. So I would say that we are, probably broadly like connective consultants.
Yeah.
For better words.
But I feel like the function of an agency is ever changing too. Like if I think about the capability of an agency over the last 5 years even in terms of the complexity and some of the things that clients are now engaging or expecting of their media agency versus what it used to be like. It feels like it's increasingly becoming that you are really an extension of almost like a few different arms of their business, not just the marketing or advertising function.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I suppose if you look at the agent, like the skill, the remit that we offer clients, again, especially being in a regional role, because that's generally where the hub of a lot of, you know, what we call crafts are based within. So we span everything from, I mean, I've got some clients where we're doing, in the media agency as such, we actually do content, we do influencer, we make ads, we do all their back-end analytics for them, we do their data management for them, which is very, like, geez, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you wouldn't really be talking about that space with a traditional media agency. Yes, we do the planning and buying, but we also do upscale, you know, brand strategy work for some clients as well, because they don't have that functionality within their organization. So it is very broad. It is very, very broad.
It's probably a good setup for the topic.
Media sales mastery.
Because the analogy I use a lot is publishers are getting a lot more diverse. Their products are becoming more complex. Their product suites are becoming broader. The market's maturing. So you've got these frontline media salespeople selling into agencies. Their propositions are becoming broader. There's a bit of muddy water flowing into the agency. Then the agency's trying to decode a lot of complexity in the client's world and kind of be that conduit between the two. And I guess the idea of this is just to kind of get under the hood a little bit more in terms of how a media agency actually, like the structure and the process and the operation works, so that a media salesperson can kind of interpret and translate that to their sales approach. So let's get into it, mate.
Yeah.
I thought about maybe a different way of doing this. So rather than just me firing off all these clinical questions around what does a strategist do, what's a planner do, what's an investment head do, maybe we could work through like almost like a brief to PCR workflow and just contextualize each of those stages and who in the agency plays that specific role and why. So let's maybe just start at the beginning. Client calls you up, you got a brief, exciting new product launch that they want to launch. You take that phone call as the head of the agency, Caleb. Who do you kind of immediately go to and bring to that client meeting?
Yeah, very good question. And like, so what we have at Initiative, we've got like some of our key global clients, what we call a gated process system. And that's more about being, make sure we're on track and that we're efficient in how we're delivering and working with clients, but also within the agency as well. So to your point, for that first step, we call that like almost like an investigation stage. We get a brief. Briefs can be terrible or they can be, you know, really, you know, really clear on what they're after. So what we'll generally do, we'll go there. I would bring, in most cases, like a head of planning and head of strategy in most cases, because they are the two individuals who are going to start with the brief and then actually create and build that. So that's where it starts. So that's how we start. What we would then do between the three of us, probably more myself and the strategy lead, is then review the brief. We sometimes might rewrite it and then push back on any sort of clarity that we may find. The biggest things missing in briefs, and I actually did a brief training workshop for a global client about 6 months ago, which you wouldn't, it's crazy. It's like, this is what needs to go into it and why. The biggest thing is like, what is success? Like, well, that's a big, big thing. I know that, you know, we don't generally always portray that to the media partners. So what is success? Is it growing X, you know, volumes of beer when I was working on Carlsberg? Is it, you know, getting so many subscribers for Prime Video, etc.? So that's key. And the other key part, which we find there's lots of ambiguity around, is what's the core objective? Then go, we want to drive, you know, awareness and consideration, and we want to drive loads of download. What is the core focus? So we spend a bit of time on that. So we're set up for success, and there's not any sort of, you know, muddiness as we walk through the process. So that's step one.
So you rewrite the brief. Is that a common practice to almost like issue a reverse brief back to the client?
It depends on the size of the project. So we wouldn't, sometimes we'll get, you know, what we try and do is we have a very clear, focused template for briefs. And it's very simple to step it through and fill in the relevant information. What we will go, we wouldn't necessarily rewrite it. We'll probably go back and ask questions against certain areas of the brief. So as I said before, if it's objective or markets, you know, etc.
Yeah, cool. And so you brought the strategist along to the meeting. You've done those steps. Would the media strategy process then commence from there? And what might that look like?
Yeah. So for us, I mean, again, initially, we're probably a little bit different to some other agencies potentially. So we actually start with who is the audience, number one, before we do anything. So because that's very very key for us to go, okay, so who's the audience? And we'll go through and we'll really tissue that out with the clients well before we go any further. And we'll look at insights around it. We'll look at, because that the audience sets up our Stripe platform. It sets up who we're going to, like, how we're going to ideate against as well. And then also how we're going to measure success against. So we spend a lot of time around that. We give them rich information because the client also uses that information for any internal marketing that they may be doing and any content or creative work as well. So we start with that and we get a check and go, yep, we're cool. We're targeting, and we'll give it like a cool name, like, we've got fashionista pop stars, like, for example. Yeah. And we'll give it a bit of flavor and color.
Right. And so what would that sort of process look like in terms of building that, like if you're building out like that segment, like is it just a lot of desktop research? Is it a lot of like looking at case studies? Like how does a strategist typically kind of sit down and just run with the ball when they're putting a media strategy together?
No, okay. So from here to do that with the audience work, a lot of the stuff, again, that we'll do a desktop. So we've got like, you know, research platforms, Roy Morgan, for example, or the equivalents in other markets we would use as a starting point. But that's rich only to a point. What we're starting to do is actually go in market. So if one of our clients, we've actually got a group of individuals that we'll go to and get some real rich video about, okay, so, you know, what's the coolest thing in Indonesia at the moment? And they'll go, we put a video and they give it a bit more flavor and color. We also reach out to media partners as well, especially those that are quite entrenched in a certain audience genre as well. We'll go like, actually, what insights do you have? Because that's your bread and butter. That's what you do day in, day out to reach a certain audience, whether it's the gray nomads down to the, you know, the teens, etc. We go, what are you doing around that? And we use that as well. So a good strategist, not something that always happens, will use a multiple of sources to then pull together their or paint a portrait and a picture of who that audience should be.
Cool. So this is one that I think is interesting at a media sales level because I posted something about this on LinkedIn the other day, actually, that a lot of media salespeople are furnished with a lot of different collateral, be it research, be it product info, be it insights or documents around their own audiences. And it seems to me that what happens is a lot of this all just gets kind of squeezed into that like response to brief. Mm. What kind of information and or collateral and or research has utility and relevance at that strategy stage if I'm a publisher? Is there anything in particular where if you're got your media strategist working through that process that they would really want for from a publisher? Is there anything comes to mind?
Yeah, I think audience work, and literally, and this is just by pure coincidence, 5 minutes before we jumped on this podcast, I got an email from a publisher who's just done a piece of research, a relevant audience segment against our target, against our category. I mean, like, cool. I've never really used them much, but now they're on my radar. Mm. I literally sent it to the strategist going, look, here's some nice research. Let's see what we can pull from that to increase our richness. So it's almost thinking from the media owner side, is that break it down to that aspect, actually create like real rich pieces of audience information that can be, you can package it up and you can go out to send to everyone.
Yeah.
Because yeah. that's your experts in. That's what you've got, for whether it be certain categories or whatever, you start to box it in and then give some rich insight around that. I think that's something that, to your point, I think, Jamie, you mentioned where it probably gets thrown in as part of an overall response, but we're looking, by that stage, we're looking at the costs and the placements and the more tactical planning aspects.
Probably a good segue. So strategy, you've identified the audience. They're your fashionista pop enthusiast or whatever it was. Do you then sort of move into like the implementation planning phase, or is there another step before that? Or
so there's still the next step of strategy is that we come up with a strategic platform. So from that lens, we might come up with based on the service or category or product that we're wanting to advertise. We look at it and we go, okay, our platform is all around you know, create the pop, I'm making this stuff up. That could be our platform, because it's all about creating excitement for the particular audience, and our product enables it to actually talk within that platform. So we've got create the pop, which that then helps us to then do ideas off the back of it. So I actually remember in Brisbane, trying to think back, wait, I can't remember, the brand was really bad. It may have been one of the Suncorp ones, where we had like a platform and went to the media. And I think it's easier when we go, look, okay, it's called create the pop. And you go, okay, cool. How do we create the pop against that audience? I would explain what create the pop means within my platform, within my channel. And then that, so then we would go to the media, go to you, to yourselves, to try and work out how we can go beyond, you know, the spots and dots, so to speak. We'll have that, but then that helps us to then, you know, create engagement and ideas and all that sort of elements.
Yeah, cool. So it's very much like a left brain kind of exercise, or a creative exercise early in terms of the strategy and the audience and the strategic platform, isn't it?
Yeah.
When do you start to think about that implementation kind of planning phase?
Yeah, so off the back of that, and we get sign off from the client in terms of like, do you agree with, like, you know, create the pop? And we're, yeah, love it. They can see it working. We would then go, we've then got, like us, I think most agencies have this, a channel planning tool. So we'll go against this audience. We're trying to drive awareness, and these are the channels that actually come up. That helps us to formulate how we would then manage our investment and spend across those channels. So that's the fit. So now we're getting into more what I call like technical planning. So this is your, so one of the things, one of the, our clients, we call it foundation and flame. This is our foundation. So rigor, we've got the numbers behind it. We're going into, like, for example, we're going outdoors, a great channel for driving, you know, awareness against this audience. So we're going to put like X percent of our budget. So that's when we'd actually do the budget allocation. Then within that, we then engage with partners to obviously to not only negotiate costs and placement and value and that sort of stuff, but also the idea, because we go, actually outdoor is a key platform. How do we create the pop with outdoor? We're going to use you anyway. Out of all the partners we've got, how are you guys going to do that? And then we'll give you a proper brief and run through it.
Yeah, and again, like this probably speaks to close to best practice, because when you do have a market where the receipt of the brief is the first insight, or the first time that the media salesperson has actually even seen the work, it's often kind of at that response to brief phase versus something a bit more collaborative, going, we'd love to get an understanding of how could this idea work better in your channels, and the thing's still sort of taking shape. So for media sales professionals, I guess here, Caleb, like what would be an appropriate type of conversation that they might be able to have with you guys proactively when you're doing that kind of planning?
Again, as I said before, the way that, again, for some clients we look at it as like foundation and flame. So you've also got to get your, you know, your fundamentals correct, making sure you've got, you know, the relevancy, blah, blah, get the numbers out. And then, and you can almost do that fairly quickly, to be honest. At the same time, I would then, and again, I mean, in most cases, the media, like the media partners, you guys are lucky. You've got creative people within your organization, you know. So I'd actually engage them to go, okay, here's a brief that they've come up with. It's for, you know, I just say Carlsberg's for beer, right? And they want to their platform is create the pop. They're trying to, you know, launch a non-alcohol beer to a young female audience. Okay, cool. Here's some of the thoughts that I've had, etc. I'd throw it to them and actually look at, from your content, how can you, like, what are the strengths that you guys can bring to that idea? You know, if it's from a out of home to a TV to a radio, you know, to digital, you know, etc. There's advantage that you have within that content, because you are producing content within that.
I like that. Yeah.
So I'd say to think about it that way.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, where context can play a really key role too. Like, it's one thing I think I'm always encouraging, certainly my team, to do is to go, when you're selling a product, like when you're selling, particularly out of home is a very technical sell. Like, product has features and attributes that that are relevant and are valid and need to be raised, but the massive kind of opportunities to think about context as well in terms of when you are intercepting or when you are impacting people with your message, like at what time of day, what's their mood, what's their mindset. If you're looking at a beer brand targeting a young female audience, it's like, would I do that in a gym? Are they more health conscious? Would I do that midweek, right? When people aren't going to be having those alcoholic drinks socially, would I do something like a station domination, because that's the way a lot of them do travel? Would I do a special build that actually just has like a completely different execution? So not thinking price, not thinking product, just thinking more laterally around what is this audience, what's going to work and engage them in a meaningful way.
Exactly right. I mean, because I think the whole notion around engagement, so, and I've got clients, you can tell what clients will do this and what won't. Some go, no, I'm just going to do a straight, again, lose outdoors the example, I'm going to do a straight ad, I just want to just get scale. Cool. And it might cost you, making it up, $1 million. Okay, done. And then you've got another client who goes, no, I want to actually, and Carlsberg's done this in the UK, where they actually said, we're going to make up an ad, like with a company, and we're going to put an actual beer tap on it, and people are going to queue up and drink beer. It's only one outdoor ad. But it costs them a fortune, but the actual PR and the social buzz off the back of it is huge. So it's thinking like that. I think that's what is a real opportunity. Because again, you guys know your content and your audience much better than what we do. And I would encourage, and I used to, I know Matt Baxter way back in the day, and I followed suit from him, is that if any of the media, you know, partners who are listening to this get poor briefs, throw it back at the agency. It's not good enough, you know. And I've seen a lot of bad briefs, and it's not good enough. It's unfair, and it's lazy as well. So I'd encourage you to do that.
Yeah, look, I think there's definitely some merit in having that convo now off the back of the last couple of years, where I think we could all be excused at times on running a bit on adrenaline and just trying to get the work out the door. But let's talk about moving it from this phase into a more robust, rigorous process around like the investment and the implementation kind of planning. Here's the first question I've got for you. I think not all agencies, but certainly in the Australian market, that investment function seems to exist in pretty much all agencies. If there isn't an investment team or a trading team, there are certainly someone in the agency who very much is kind of the specialist in that space. What is the absolute upside of having a dedicated investment team, and how has this specialization kind of evolved from what you've seen?
My view on it is, a lot of client commercial deals are wrapped up in savings. So the function of that individual or team, is that they need to actually demonstrate a value savings. The easiest way to do that is to go, we planned it at $100, we bought it for $80, we saved you $20. That's very, very tangible. The client goes tick, and with that day, the client will either, you know, they reinvest it, they can do whatever they like, but it's a very, very tangible way, and it's becoming, with some clients, more and more relevant and more focused for them. So that's where the investment behind the investment team has come about. Other clients won't have 100% focus on that. They'll look at other ways of value and how value is generated. So I think we can, and I've seen this as well, I'm not saying it doesn't happen where I am now, but it has happened in other agencies where you'd have all this lovely strategy work, a great idea, it all gets killed because it's too expensive and we can't buy, you know, the media we can for the price that we wanted to and save and get a savings of X%. So it's probably on us to educate clients around the value story. So what is the value? It's not just always a saving and an investment of hard savings or bonus value or what have you. We need to educate the clients. Actually, you know what? The value should be based on the going right back to the brief. What are the campaign objectives? You know, and against not only media, but what are the brand objectives? What are the sales objectives? And that's what we should be worrying about.
You know what's interesting about that too, mate, is I've worked with and continue to work with some really sharp investment heads who are actually exceptional in a couple of areas, and it's sort of not unique to them, but it's where I think they've got the investment thing right, is they understand the hell out of every media publisher in terms of they understand the inventory you've got, they understand roughly where the market's priced, they understand what your priorities are at a revenue level. Specifically, what I mean by that is they'll know there's certain products that you look like a hero if they make their way on the plan. They know there's little pockets where you got a bit of pain, where there's, you know, with the right kind of investment, they could actually really help you out. I guess that the way I'd say it is, like, they know how to behave to extract more value out of the client because they've got a really good understanding of the media landscape at a pricing and investment level. But to your point, mate, and this is probably where I think most investment people would get frustrated too, is there does feel like there can be a disconnect if the media salesperson is predominantly dealing with investment, like that's their only line into the agency. That's the person they're talking to about the brief. It's the person they're interrogating the brief with. And then all of a sudden they go, hang on a sec, we're getting commoditized over here. It's all about price. And it's kind of like what this is trying to probably do is go, how do you sort of, I'm not going to say you not go rogue, but how do you potentially kind of move or adjust the way you're engaging the agency in order to have a little bit more insight and a little bit more custody of the information throughout the process?
Exactly. And I think just going through that process, as I said, you can start right up with the value you bring to the agency with the audience understanding. So you go right up the stream and you start there. So I agree. You're not waiting to actually talk when when the rubber hits the road and you're negotiating hard and you've got to get more sites up or more bonus value for radio or whatever it may be. You're not doing that, or your discount's not, you know, deep enough and all that sort of stuff. That's where you can get out of that mire of that discussion. Because I agree, look, I mean, it happens, and sometimes agencies, we just go, you know what, we know what we want. Conversely, the agencies will go, you know what, this is what I call a black and white campaign. We just need to get stuff out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We're not going to get any stuff. It was purely about we're all about reach. It's just get it in and out. It's down and dirty. Let's just do that. As long as they're open and honest, so you're not wasting your time doing this idea to go, cool. But the next brief could be an opportunity to do that. So you're making very, because you're almost giving clear deliverables, expectations on the media partners.
Yeah. And that's also what I'm also curious about are like, what are some of the things that media salespeople might not be aware of, particularly at that investment or at that briefing buying level? Because this just feels like where a lot of process conflict comes up. Something as simple as the cost of the planned media versus a rate card going up, or live avails being how they are. Like, there's all these pieces of inventory that we planned the campaign around, we need to buy, they're now gone. What do we do? Is there anything you could offer some insight there of like what... You know, if I'm an investment person rolling up to work, what are like the three or four headaches that I'd love to avoid when dealing with a publisher?
Yeah. Oh, look. I think you should have said. I was never allowed to get dabble in the investment. I tried.
Yeah.
But
I see you being you're too big picture, bro.
I'd probably get bored and go, okay, if that's going to happen, I'm out. No, I'd probably say, look, an investment person, I mean, number one, yes. I mean, you want to match the planning guidelines as close as you can at the best possible rate. So what does that mean? You need to have a partner, like a media partner, who is willing to, you know, work on what the value is that, if that's a discount, if that's additional inventory, whatever that value may be, it could be a lot of other things as well. So actually working through that, so having the flexibility to talk about value. Also, about because that's one side. The other side, as you mentioned before, is if there's a specific sort of buy. Let's go back to the idea of, you know, create the pop or something. I can't remember. I've put on my strap platform. Yeah, cool. So say, for example, you go, okay, we've got this cool idea and we're going to go outdoor. We're going to like bring all outdoor. It's all going to like pop visually, it's going to be, we're going to own it in one, you know, for 1 hour. I think I tried this in Australia, maybe like for 1 hour at a certain time, every single, you know, outdoor site in Brisbane, for example. that own media owners. And you go, that's a cool idea. Cool. Okay, Caleb's done. And then your investors go, like, how the hell am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Like, that's... And so I think it's probably working closely and not saying no. So I think for an investment person, being like, okay, look, we need to make this happen. I know it might be a little bit far stretched, never been done before. Can we give it a go?
Yeah.
Can we look to go, you know, let's forget about cost. It's more about accessibility and feasibility around that particular idea. And that's two ends of the spectrum, I would say, on that front. Also, the other critical thing is with this, owning the 1 hour and outdoor sites, whatever, that's quite hard, we know. So it's giving the time as well. So I think it's, allowing enough time for that to sort of manifest, and also going through the due diligence from the media partner side as well, to if that's feasible. And we always love, from agency, we always love media first, never been done before's type thing.
Yep. Yep.
So where we can make that happen is a good thing. So one of the things I remember speaking to, this was back in Australia actually, because I was never allowed to speak to the media in China, by the way. That's right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. This is in Australia, and I told one of the guys, I said, you know, you guys are really creative like media partner. You should just have like a bank of ideas sitting and just speaking to your innovation teams and your content teams and your creative teams, so that when these agencies do come to you, you can go like, cool, let's pull one out, not off the shelf, but we've already got the working.
Yeah, yeah, you've already tested it. A game plan.
Yeah,
yeah,
correct. Yep. And or reuse as well. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's probably the other thing. So it's flexibility from both sides on cost and availability and also idea.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like one thing I remember when there was like a real arms race for ideas in the market, like I think that was certain media, that's the currency you trade off. Like I know radio for many years, that used to be you'd win or die by how good your idea was, and your product was almost secondary. And what I remember thinking was the challenge was not coming up with new ideas, it was taking the same 7 ideas and making them feel fresh. It was like, how do we kind of spin this one up to give it a new angle? And I remember we even had a saying, it was like, you don't need a new idea, you just need a fresh idea.
That's exactly right, because I mean, there's only so much you can do. And look, and yes, you'll get the odd, like, never been done before, we're doing this in certain channel, that's fine. Mm. Look, and do that every time. You can't expect that.
Yeah.
You can't expect that, you know. Again, we had a client actually in China. I'll give you this as an example. This is probably more the Chinese way of thinking. And we had to come up with 10 ideas every time. Now I'd buy 0. They just wanted to see what ideas we had. In the end, I went, you know what? Exactly what you said, actually. We used to go, let's just freshen it up. Boom, here it goes. Because I'm not going to waste our time. They're never going to buy the ideas. I just want to look at the ideas. That was part of their ticker box. Yeah, they've done 10 ideas. So that's probably a bad example.
No, but it's a good point, because I think it's, it's just an interesting area. I'm really heartened to see that, like, this idea-led response to brief is coming back in a big way in the last, like, 3 or 4 months. And for someone like me who loves that stuff, we've kind of been devoid of it the last couple of years. It's been very functional. It's been very much about just, you know, efficiency and effectiveness, but leaning into data, not necessarily taking time to kind of really try and innovate and do some interesting stuff.
And so just one last thing on the idea thing as well. I think it's important. Like, so what we did something like literally in the last month with a client, and I said before, this foundation of Flame, and we actually said, you know what, we can't do Flame on all of your campaigns. We need to go through a criteria and be very laser point focused, because a lot of the stuff's going to be just foundation. It's going to pump it out. That's cool. So we're very focused on these. These are the ones, and we did a criteria. One of them was around, is it easy to wide add off? Is there longevity? Do you have, you know, access to assets, etc.? So you've got the time to build out these sort of more innovative ideas. So I think that's all. And so I know it used to happen as well, where every brief you guys probably got, you go, I must have an ideas. Really? You're launching in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
What ideas do you want? You know? So I think it's got to be managed as well.
Hey, this is Jamie. Thank you for listening to the podcast, which is all around unpacking media agencies. Now, Whether you're selling media direct or within an agency environment, you're competing in a broader marketplace. And in most markets around the world, regardless of their size, there's really kind of one thing that's true. There's a finite amount of revenue opportunity, and all publishers and media sales professionals are vying for that. So, competitive advantage is a massive, massive part of this. Unlocking your competitive advantage, finding out what your competitive advantage is and exploiting it. I had the lovely Sarah Williams from Spotify on the podcast to talk around competitive advantage. Here is a little bit of that now.
I do think that competitive advantage is really important because it plays into your value proposition. It can really trigger purchases. It'll be the reason brands and agencies buy from you and not from someone else.
So that was from the episode Unlocking Competitive Advantage with Sarah Williams from Spotify. She's based over in New York, was a great guest, gave some fantastic insight and some fantastic info. So once you finish listening to this podcast with Caleb, I suggest if you haven't already, go back and have a listen to the episode Unlocking Competitive Advantage. Very, very worthwhile. That's a good segue into this kind of hypothetical brief, because you've got like the strategic platform, the investment team's maybe done the buy, or maybe like you've just done the planning. But in terms of going back to the client and putting, I guess, that recommendation back, is this sort of the point where you would typically pitch the recommendation back to the client for their final sign-off?
Yeah, so good question. So the way I prefer to do it is to tissue it out
yep.
with the partner. So what we generally do, and my experience is, okay, and I'll just use outdoor, go to all of the outdoor companies, they come back and I go, you know what, I like these ideas. Let's build this out a bit more. And then we'll go, first step, we're taking it to the client. It might be four ideas. We start there because it's unfair to go all the way through the client not seeing it as well, and then the media partner doing all of that work, and then it comes, no, we don't want to do it. So I think the best way to do it is when we're even had it at the very, very beginning of the strategic platform stage to go, here's some initial ideas. Maybe the media partner's not involved at that stage, but here's an initial thought. And we're doing it right now on a client. And we go, cool, that's great. We're now going to brief them in. Cool. They've briefed in. They've come back. Feasibility around it. Yep, great. Okay, we're ticking boxes now. Then we go to the next stage. It's taking the client along the journey, because things may change. And then we go, actually, you know what? For example, in my role, we might go, let's not do it in Vietnam. Let's actually do it in Thailand, because I know that team's more likely to do it. But same in a local market. Let's not do it in that city. Let's do it in like Brisbane as opposed to Sydney, for example.
If it's a case where you've briefed out multiple publishers and multiple channels, the client wants to see a pretty built out media plan and a recommendation of what you think they should do in terms of, these are the publishers we should go with, these are the ideas we should leave with, this is how it should all come to life. I'm curious to know what that kind of presentation looks like, because what I think is really interesting is this idea of chain of custody. It's not something we consider a lot in media sales when we pitch. We go, put your best deck forward, do your most persuasive pitch in the room for why you should be there. And what we probably forget is like the agency now has to then review everyone else's, curate a whole bunch of content into the deck they then take the client through on present that work. Can you talk a little bit about like that process and maybe some ways that the media salespeople can be A, more mindful of what that process looks like, and B, make it a bit easier?
Yeah, I know exactly, because I mean, I remember like loads of media partners coming in with like huge decks. I mean, that's cool, but that all of that work probably go into two slides. Because to take it to your point, where we're having to present all of the other work across multiple channels, and there might be a few ideas we pull out. So I think that is really hard. Like, I mean, a lot of the ideas that how we pitch them in is on one slide. Very visual, bang, here's what we can do. We might have a bit of a talk track around it. But again, that's the first showing of the idea. So it's probably the way I think is, again, it's aiming to be fair on the media partner to go, right, you need to, well, what I need is just like, here's a thought of an idea. I want to, you know, again, Carlsberg, I want to pour beer out of an outdoor sign. Like, what the?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
media first.
Yeah. You might go, okay, let me look into it. It's potentially we're able to do that. That's awesome. So we'll put that in a case. So, yep, so O Media can do that. That's great. Well, no, looking into it, Here's some other examples that they've done, and we can build it out further. That's all we need. We don't need to have it finished. And I think that's probably because a client may go, you know what, that's a dumb idea. I think we should put it all onto, you know, housing a, you know, a live DJ event, or I don't know, make it up, whatever. Yeah. So I think that's probably, to be honest, more on the onus on us, and then for you guys to probably go to the and see what do you actually need.
Yeah.
Like, what do you need? Like, we don't have to do like a 25-page PowerPoint deck all the time. Like, what do you need?
Yeah. Well, that's
being very, very clear.
That's a really good call, because I think I remember it wasn't really a cheat code, but it was just something that happened, which I was like, oh, that's interesting, was we started doing a pitch on a page. So we would, I had the team doing proposals, and then I said, distill that down into a pitch on a page, because we had this really quite simple pitching framework, which was like, it was, you know, literally like the problem or the brief challenge, a consumer insight approach, bring it to life. Like, it was very much like a 5 or 6 step type of thing. The guys just started doing that because I was kind of like, why do we do these appendix pages? Like, why we always do appendixes? Why do we do appendixes? These are why don't we sum up the whole pitch on one slide and spend our time, like, make the appendix page a functional part of the deck? And for whatever reason, we just kind of started getting a little bit more on the plan. And I remember thinking, it's probably that we've got a good idea, or we've got a good response. It's very likely that we're also really easy to understand and really easy to on-sell. And when you're talking about being the 15th publisher that person's reviewing, if you can just remove those little barriers and make that just that little bit easier to get yourself into that recommendation, you know, then like, it was a really enlightening moment for me where I said, wow, that's a pretty simple tweak of behavior on our end, but look at the upside it seems to have for us.
Oh, exactly. Because, I mean, as you see, you've got to go through all of these proposals and try, okay, so where's the ideas? A few ideas here. Cool. How does it work? The other thing as well, which I find doesn't always happen, and again, it's maybe on the agency side, where if it's quite a complex idea and you go, oh, no, don't worry, just send it through. Sometimes you need to talk through the idea. Because if it's quite complex, if you're not given that opportunity, that's unfair. I think because then you have to try and send it through in like 10 slides, and it's very hard to explain.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump ahead. So the client signed off on the recommendation. Happy days. You've gone back to all of the publishers. The booking's been done. The material's been dispatched. The campaign's live in market, and you've got the agency now monitoring and tracking and optimizing. What does that process look like, mate? And more specifically, from a media sales professional's perspective, is there anything they can do in that process to make life a bit easier for the agency?
Yeah, I mean, and again, going back to the very start, there's various different ways of tracking performance on a campaign. Some clients are really open. My preference is if we can track it against business and brand metrics, that's the main thing. Media is there as a currency to see how we're performing it within that negotiation and phase. So look, we've got some clients who we're starting to look at the campaign after one day of going live. Is the material actually live, number one? Day three, we're starting to see some performance, especially in digital, some performance delivery insights we can start to formulate. Day seven, right, we're optimizing on day seven, and we're going hard at that because the campaign's in market for 3-4 weeks, done. That's a different, another client, always on, we're monitoring on a monthly basis to see, okay, what nuances do we tweak and change, etc. From a media partner perspective, what could help in that stage there is proof of going live, if that makes sense, as soon as you can. That's a big thing. Could we go like, oh, cool, we don't have to worry about that. So that's more of an operational live campaign functionality. Yep, cool. If it's like proof of postings for outdoor, or, you know, even TV, because TV, we don't get the actual post until, I'm trying to think now, geez, 10 days after, like the week after or something. So even if, you know, TV guys, if it's gone live, radio, the same thing. That's a big tick. You don't have to worry about that. It's all gone live. Then from a performance, I mean, with performance, a little bit harder because a lot of the, you know, the way that we track performance is through a third party. You know, so whether it be, you know, Nielsen, Oztam, etc., that's third party. So we've got to adhere to that. But then any, you know, if it's So that's what we call our standards. If it's a big idea, so it's a big idea we've done, and we're tracking it through some potentially no brand metrics. There may be some brand metrics that you guys are doing. It could be through your social listening. You've seen a lot more chatter about, you know, the Carlsberg beer tap through your social platforms, through your content, etc. All of that is really rich because it just adds more depth to the performance of the campaign than just, yeah, we got 53% reach versus, you know, 50%. Fantastic. So I think, and it's probably working with the agency to go, okay, well, why are you doing this idea and what are the success metrics around it? You know, and I think, and how you can help with that.
And some of that to me just sounds like an easy win too, in terms of here's a couple of observations. Like, we've gone live. Typically what we'd expect in our channel is X.
Yeah.
The audience has really latched onto this. This seems to be getting a lot of traction here. Here's a screenshot, or here's an audio grab, or here's a pop.
Exactly. And like going back to the good old Carlsberg tap, because I love that idea.
Yeah.
You know, especially because how do you measure that? That's quite hard.
Yeah.
It's one outdoor site. So, you know, and again, exactly what you said, you know, you know your media, you know, you could come back and say, look, here's awesome, great pictures of people like queuing up for it. Never seen anything like it. The buzz is going crazy. And we'd obviously monitor the buzz as well.
Yeah.
But it's more about putting some benchmarks that you may have that can sort of compare.
Yeah, and some context.
I think it's quite nice.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. Well,
yeah.
So campaigns run. Obviously, we've had no major disasters. Coming to a kind of a close here, and I know we're sort of being pretty crude, but I just want to step it out. Post-analysis, right? What does this process actually involve on a media agency side? So, like, who runs it? How does it get run? How does it get packaged and presented back to the client? And again, from a media sales professional, what are we kind of able to do in that process to obviously make life a bit easier?
Okay, so there's two ways that, and again, this is very broad. Okay, you've got what I like a campaign performance, and then what we call a quarterly business performance as well. So there's two; both have got relevancy. So with the campaign performance, that generally be run by the planning team. We call it comms design. So the guys who have built the plan and have worked, and with the planning team and the investment team. Because in there you've got the delivery around, you know, those foundational metrics of reach. All of those are going to tick the box. We would also have, you know, from an investment, any sort of savings and value, etc. But importantly as well, which I think sometimes gets missed a little bit, is the key insights and findings, and then what we can take for next time. What are the learnings we can use for next time? It gets lost. So I think that's really, really important. From what the media partners can help us with is, again, providing some sort of context around, okay, so how come we spent all this money on the tap idea and we thought you'd get a lot more return in terms of like social currency and people talking about it and influence it and all that sort of stuff, but we didn't, you know, it'd be good to get your context on what you've seen from a similar idea or big idea. And so I think having that, again, going back to the same thing of going live, that context, I think is quite nice. We've even done, I remember doing a post review. This is a little bit fancy, like years and years ago, actually in my Sydney days. And we actually did it in a pub, because it was all about being out and about. It was a very heavy outdoor campaign. And this is actually working with the outdoor partner at the time to actually secure the venue, to help with the, and actually show, we actually did the post now. That's right. Sorry. We did it on a bus. That's right. Did it on a bus because all this outdoor going, right, you're going to travel in the world of the consumer. So we're going to go there and you're on the bus. There's all bus advertising in there. The bus is wrapped. You're then going past. You're seeing all of the outdoor everywhere. You're going to a pub. We're having a few beers. You go to the toilet. There's ads in the toilet. So something like that as well is quite cool, especially if it's, you know, that could be another nice way. And I know that, you know, I've been on quite a few of them where you do like outdoor tour of like campaigns going live, but it could be something else as well, or how it's packaged up. And it's, we don't do it enough. I'd say if a partner can come and go, okay, so how do we go beyond the numbers, but how do we try and demonstrate what our audience saw? So, and I mean your audience, so an O audience saw within that campaign period, which is like that's just like something that's a bit more a little bit different.
I think there's been a lingering mindset and attitude from media that, maybe I'm speaking for everybody here, but let me give you a hypothesis. I think there was an attitude of post-campaign reports are sort of a tick and flick exercise. The coordinator does it if they want it, but on to the next deal. And I remember distinctly a period in time where there was a complete mindset shift around PCRs for me. I had a sales director at the time who came in and said, you guys have got terrible retention. Like, he was new. And he goes, you guys are not retaining as much business as you should be. Like, what's your post-campaign report process? Like, I said, oh, look, this is what we do. He's like, the whole way you retain business is through your PCRs, right? So we put a very structured process in place around really detailed PCRs. We would put as much effort in, maybe not as much, we'd put half as much effort into our PCR as we would into our sales deck, right? But in terms of, we would still put effort into it in the sense of it'd be designed beautifully, it would have a narrative built into it, it would be presented by the salesperson to the agency, there would be key learnings and insights. The worse the campaign went, the more critical the PCR would be to go in and actually deep dive and own, you know, hey, we actually think we missed the mark on this campaign. We think that our idea probably didn't have these elements. What was really kind of critical about it, though, at the end was, this is what we would do next time, and here's what we would love to incentivize if you were to do it with us next time. So it gave us a mechanism to have that next conversation. 6 months of that process, and we retained, God, $3-4 million more business that year. Like, it blew my mind. It was like, oh wow, we've been missing, and it's just customer service. But for anyone who thinks it's a waste of time and onto the next deal, it's like, good post-campaign reporting is a revenue-generating exercise. It's just not a revenue-generating exercise in the way we think about it.
Correct. And so I think similar with the, I had a call with the client 2 weeks ago, going, how come we don't see learnings from, you know, previous campaigns into our new campaigns? I mean, oh, we do, but we're not, the way we articulate it isn't clear. So it's a simple thing, really. So we've done it like across two pages now, and gone like, okay, here's the learnings. We're going to pick them up. This is what we've learned, use for next time. We're going to make sure that we take those same learnings in the next campaign, drop them in, and then we actually use them within that next response.
Yeah, great. So it becomes like a cyclical thing.
Correct. Exactly. That goes loops of that, because that's how we look at a process, is that it's, you know, it's forever looping and it's always improving on that.
Love it, mate. Well, we're going to jump into a listener question.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey, Jamie, do you have any advice for navigating or overcoming challenges with investment teams in agencies? I worry that my proposals aren't resonating and are always just being drilled down into spreadsheet metrics.
We covered this a bit already, obviously, but just initial impression of that question, mate, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think from the media partner, I think you need to go back to the agency and go, okay, what is the core objective of this that you're wanting from us? As I said before, is it that you want, you know, just a down and dirty scale, inventory reach and a cost? Are you sure that's, yeah, that, yeah, you got it in writing? Great. Then, unfortunately, that's what your response is going to be. So, but at least, you know, you don't waste time. It's not about, you know, being smart with your time. Conversely, if you go, actually, if it's about ideas, why am I doing, to this point, like all of this analysis with, you know, numbers and da da da? Why, if it's all about ideas? So I think it's really getting clarity from the agency about what their expectations are from the brief. And to be fair, if it is, said before, if it is just like, I just want scale and cheap, that's fine. At least you're aware and you can manage that response in your own way.
Yeah, cool. So you think a lot of it just comes down to kind of calling the play for what it is?
Yeah. And so if you go back to what I said, like, because we challenge the brief with clients, we'll do a reverse brief. The same should happen from your side. You know, if you've got a brief, you go, right, you say it back and go, so what you want is A, B, C. Okay, great, got it. Very clear. So that way, and especially to help as well when you're evaluating. So I remember one thing I did actually in Brisbane, I think I did like a media brief template, I think, yeah. And we used to put in there, well, I told the guys to put in there, what is the criteria we're measuring against and prioritizing it. So if it's about cost, it's about cost. Clear. You know, if it's about ideas, it's about ideas or whatever it may be. So it's very, so I would get that clarity from them.
I would agree with that, support that. And what I would add to that is I don't think there's too many people in media sales who truly understand what the investment role actually is. Like, and I say, what I mean by that is they obviously understand what the role is in the context of how they interact. What I don't think they understand is a dynamic that plays out in the rest of the agency around that investment person. So I would say that a lot of it, and probably the whole kind of drawing this whole episode to a close, the whole point of this is, you know, agencies are pretty transparent, right? I don't think there's any agency where you go, hey, what's your brief to pitch process? Who works on it? What do you guys do? What's your strategy person do? What's your planner do? That wouldn't kind of divulge that information. Would actually be pretty happy to talk about themselves. So part of me with this question, I was just going, I think a lot of it's actually just trying to kind of map the agency out a little bit more and just get an understanding of what that investment person's world looks like, what that brief to PCR process looks like, and see if there are places where you could and should be having some dialogue that aren't just at that receipt of brief or the spreadsheet metrics, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly that. So I think, as I said, you know, it can start, and our process is audience. I think that's a big area where, you know, media partners can bring a lot of value to that story. And you know what agencies you work on and what clients you work closely with, or maybe ones that you don't, maybe ones you've targeted.
Yeah.
Actually get to know who they're trying to target. And if it's relevant to your platform and your channel, etc., then, you know, feed the agency with that information, you know, and make it, if it's a big account, then like we do, we pitch, you know, we do like videos of the audience, we package it together, package it up. I mean, you guys are great at doing that packaging, but actually start, don't put any costs, no, nothing, just all about audience as a starting point, right up at the start of the process.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That is the end of the episode, Caleb. Thanks, mate. It's been awesome to talk to you after a little while. And I suppose the last question I have for you is, you know, what's going on in the world of Initiative APAC or Asia? What's keeping you busy at the moment?
Yeah, look, no. Look, I think the world's quite interesting at the moment. And Asia's really interesting. You know, sitting here in Singapore, Singapore's not a real country. No, Singapore's lovely, but it's quite a smaller country. So you're dealing with a number of multiple markets. So as I said today, you can see some of the big markets up here, China. China's waking up. So I was speaking to some clients today there, saying to look at what they're going to spend, they're increasing their budgets, which is good, I think, for the economy and how that's working. Other markets are in a bit more sort of disarray. We've got a few global activity going on at the moment, especially in Europe and the US, what's happening there. So for me, it's really looking at trying to navigate through that in terms of where the focus and growth is across the region here. And Australia's a bit of a unicorn, to be honest, because it is almost self-sufficient. I don't deal a lot with Australia anymore, which is quite funny. I sort of just go, they're cool. They're so it's really dealing up in the region here and trying to bring up the skill level across the region. And then looking to see how we can leverage and connect with, I mean, we're quite fortunate at Initiative where we're a smaller global team and we connect, you know, very easily. Like I can pick up the phone and what's happening in the UK to New York, etc., very easily, which is nice. And it's pretty harder for other networks to do that.
Yeah, I feel like Initiative's always had a great place. It's almost like the Challenger brand agency. Like you guys seem to like to work with those brands that are, you know, having lobbing a few grenades at a market leader.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly right. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I'm trying to do day to day. Survive.
Yep.
Like everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, mate, thank you for taking the time to be with us. I'm hoping to get to Singapore soon, as we were saying offline. So when I do, mate, we'll enjoy it in 56 degree heat, 1000% humidity. We'll enjoy a nice beer together.
That's it.
Thanks, buddy.
Cheers. Great. Nice one.